ongoing protests for racial justice have started to shift the conversation around how we talk about race in the United States. And in some newsrooms, it's literally changing how journalists write about race and identity. Outlets including the Associated Press, the Los Angeles Times, and even us here at WNYC have started capitalizing the B when referring to Black people and culture. And that decision aligns with what Black media outlets have been doing for decades. The Associated Press also announced that they'll begin capitalizing the I in Indigenous when referring to Indigenous communities. Some outlets and many social media users have also started using the acronym BIPOC, which refers to Black people, Indigenous people, and people of color, and it's a term that's meant to affirm Black and Indigenous people and identity. But even that term has been criticized by some linguists and activists for homogenizing these different groups' experiences and erasing their individuality. How the media takes on language and identity in a time of social change? That's where we start today on The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Joining me now is Sandra E. Garcia, a reporter for The New York Times. Sandra, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also, we have Tristan Atone, editor-in-chief of The Texas Observer. Tristan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me also.
And John McWhorter is here with us as well. He's a linguistics professor at Columbia University and author of the book Words on the Move. Great to have you with us, John.
Thank you, Tanzina.
Well, we got a robust conversation, so let's get started. Sandra, you wrote a piece for the New York Times where you investigated the term BIPOC. Where did this come from?
Well, we don't really know, but it is widely used in Canada. It started being used on Twitter. The first instance that it was used was in 2013. But in Canada, they use BIPOC very commonly. They use it all the time. And that's because they feel like it's important to distinguish what Black people or descendants of Africans in Canada have been through and what Indigenous people in Canada have been through.
So, John, when we see emergence like BIPOC, like terms like BIPOC and stylistic choices connected to social change, is that part of the natural evolution of language to start to see this? Because I'm thinking back to, you know, Hispanic and then Latino and then Latinx and sort of all of these phases that we go through. So what is your assessment of BIPOC right now?
Well, I think that it's an interesting new term. I'm not exactly sure that it was needed because, you know, every generation or two, these terms often are renewed because negative associations settle down upon them. And so Hispanic changes to Latino, Black changes to African American. People seek something that feels more positive and fresher. I'm not exactly sure what BIPOC responds to in that sense in terms of how people of color, you know, whatever that exactly is referring to, were feeling about being referred to as people of color. The Black issue seems to take us from African American back to Black, and I'm not sure how people feel about that. Then the Indigenous issue, there seem to be people who have problems with it, but language is about renewal. You don't sit and say the same things generation after generation after generation. The central aspect of why you open your mouth is because you wish to call someone's attention to something. And that often means refreshing terminology. And it's not surprising that that term has happened in these times in particular when we want each other's attention for so many reasons.
Tristan, you are an editor-in-chief. You are using a lot of these terms and making decisions about how these terms get played out, particularly in media. Tell us about your idea when it comes to BIPOC. Is it important to separate out, in for your editorial purposes, Black people and Indigenous people when referring to people of color?
Well, yeah. I mean, how we view and talk about ourselves is always changing, and it will continue to. I mean, what I want to see is accuracy. So I'm a Kiowa tribal member, and I want to be identified as such. But there is plenty of guidance offered by organizations like the Native American Journalists Association to help guide these conversations. And I think the more that journalism organizations sort of resist changes or are unable to sort of roll with the times, with language, the more it exposes the industry as being out of touch and out of date and often out anti-diversity.
So Tristan, to that point, and to John's point earlier, we've seen a lot of evolution of language right now. We're at this moment, a very big inflection point in this country. How do you, Tristan, as an editor, make the decision when it's appropriate to use a broad term like people of color, versus something more specific?
Well, we speak with our staff. You know, with BIPOC, we haven't used the term in our reporting at the moment. I'm sure it will come up at some point. But again, we strive for accuracy, and we strive to recruit reporters from those communities who know better when it comes to terminology and self-identification. It allows us to move with the conversation instead of making changes at a glacial pace. And essentially, having those conversations and having a diverse staff helps keep us current with readers and up to date and how we describe ourselves.
It's something that newsrooms across the country have been grappling with, is how to have that more diverse staff that is representative of the communities that they cover. Sandra, you wrote the piece for the New York Times, which is sort of putting a stake in the ground here about this term. But a lot of the people you talked to were actually critical of BIPOC. What did they see as some of the shortcomings of the phrase?
Well, I spoke to Sylvia Obel, who is a co-host on a Netflix podcast, Okay, Now Listen. She's an African-American. Actually, she's a Black person of Nigerian descent. And she felt that people should stop making decisions at best without asking Black people how they want to be referred to. Black people in the United States, African American people in the United States, have been called a ton of things, and they have never been consulted on those things. And she just felt like BIPOC is a term that, like you said, homogenizes everyone, and it doesn't allow the person who is using this term to do the reading, basically, to take the time to learn about all the different backgrounds and everything that people have gone through. And just calling them BIPOC is the same as saying the oppressed over there, you know, not white people. But it's important to distinguish who we are talking about. Same with Chelsea Luger, who is a wellness trainer at a wellness center. And she is also a member of a tribe. And she felt that the term is, you know, on the heels of colonization, because it erases what people have gone through, what Black people have gone through, Indigenous people have gone through. And with the POC, it just groups just everyone of color, when we all have different backgrounds, different ways that we have been oppressed. And so they're not pretty keen on using a term that just bunches everyone together and keeps people from doing the work that's necessary to learn about the different types of oppression that they have experienced.
Well, and I want to sort of drill down a little bit on that point about the other sort of POC box, right? Because that seems to be also at issue here. John, when you hear terms like people of color, I mean, this term, as far as I remember, was sort of something that came into the fore to represent this. I think back to Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition, where, you know, we sort of all are in this group of non-white people. That term itself has evolved, and there are people who don't want to be associated with people of color. How do you think that, how much do you think these terms matter to the communities they're actually referring to, John?
Well, to be honest, I think there's often a disconnect between the conversations that we have, you know, the media people, academic people, college town people, and other people, where labels evolve in perhaps a more organic fashion and aren't looked at with such fine distinction. But people of color, you know, last time I heard, that wasn't good enough because it didn't individualize various people of color enough, and it sounded ominously like colored. And so, yeah, there's some problems there. But then I also worry about this idea that the new term BIPOC is wrong because it doesn't individualize enough, because I think it's natural to language that we genericize to an extent. So we say plant, and we're not talking about roses versus, you know, daffodils versus maple trees. I'm not sure that we can make an exception for that when it comes to groups of human beings. And so, for example, there is a marvelous array of indigenous/Native American communities in North and South America, so many different communities. But I wonder if it's possible to have a way of referring to all of them that also gets in the individuality. We have to generalize to an extent. But then again, I get the feeling these are conversations that we're having here that often are quite different from the conversations that the vast majority of people involved in the name are having, or frankly, even though I'm indulging in the conversation myself, that even consider significant. And so I think we just need to remember that we're having a kind of MSM conversation as opposed to a conversation about everybody else.
I have to say, I agree. I think there are conversations that are happening on social media and among the media ourselves that really are not, when I bring those issues to folks that aren't in the media, they're like, what are you talking about?
Right.
But I do want to backtrack a little bit here to Tristan's point for a minute. And Sandra, get your thoughts on this, because Tristan, you mentioned that, you know, the specificity and the accuracy of really understanding a tribal name or affiliation is important in reporting. And then Sandra, you mentioned the sort of POC as a catch-all, right, for non-Black, non-Indigenous folks. But here's the question. I mean, there are also Black people who are not African American, who are they're also Latinos, right, who have specific country of origin. So how specific, Sandra, do we want to start to get in terms of our origins to get away from the POC term?
Right. I think that we should be extremely specific. And it also depends on how people want to be referred to, right? So I'm a Black woman, but I'm also Dominican. In this country, when I say I'm a Black woman, people assume I'm African American. And I think that that assumption happens not only because of the way I look, but also because of the way these terms are used here in this country. I think we should call people what they want to be called and talk to them about how they want to be called. I do think that the term people of color erases our culture, right? And while I am a Black woman, there are certain things and certain cultural things that I don't experience or have never done, my family has never been through, because they're not African American. And I think that distinction is important. It's important for me to say, you know what, yes, I understand this, but it's not something that my family has ever been exposed to. I do think that POC does the work academically and in media circles, but it is a lazy term, if you ask me.
There have been a lot of recent changes here, specifically when it comes to capitalizing the B in Black and the I in Indigenous. Tristan, from your perspective, how important has it been for you to capitalize the I in Indigenous?
Well, at the Native American Journalists Association, we've been fighting for the capitalization of Indigenous for about 5 years. We've argued that Indigenous is an identity like Black and not an adjective, and that the term should be capitalized to avoid confusion between plants, animals, and human beings. So it is really a big deal that the AP style book has caught up with the rest of the globe. Capitalizing Indigenous has been common practice in everywhere from Canada and Australia and New Zealand, for instance. So we're happy to see that these changes are being made and that this recognition is finally coming about after so many years of fighting for it.
Why was it such a fight, though, Tristan? I mean, the explanation you just gave me seems pretty straightforward as to why it should be capitalized.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's fair.
I think that journalism organizations are often moving at a pace that are out of sync with the actual conversations that people are having. Journalists of color make up nearly 23% of newsrooms or so, and that number has been more or less stagnant over the years. I think the simplest explanation to why the situation exists is that newsrooms are often actively opposed to any sort of diversity.
Sandra, the B in Black is now being capitalized because the AP had made that decision, and we know newspapers tend to fall in line and follow AP style. The New York Times does have its own style guide. So is the Times capitalizing the B in Black? And more broadly, what's your assessment of how significant the decision to capitalize B in Black is right now?
I'm not sure if the Times is capitalizing the B in Black. We have a standards team that deals with that. I'm sure the conversation is being had, especially now that the AP has changed its style. I do think that the conversation around capitalizing B in Black is important because, like I said earlier, Black people, African-American people in this country have been called all sorts of names, and they have never been consulted. And this seems to be the first time that as a group together, they're okay with what they want to be called, which is Black, and they want to be capitalized. And so I do think it's an important conversation, just like we would respect what someone wants to be considered, you know, how they want their gender considered, just how we would respect that someone identifies as a non-binary or anything like that. We should respect what people want to be called and how they want to be called. So I think the conversation is extremely important.
John, in terms of the use of capitalization in both of these terms, do you see that as a significant move?
No, I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem with it. I mean, it feels natural to me. I've always kind of wanted to capitalize it myself because it refers to a group of people with an identity and a history. And so, sure, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to capitalize the B, good, I'll happily go along with it. I've always liked black as a term better than African-American, but that's a whole different rant. But nobody ever had a problem with capitalizing African-American because Africa comes with a capital letter already. But to be honest, and this is me toggling between my jolly linguist and quote-unquote contrarian race self, honestly, I think I'm more interested in ending the war on drugs and reforming the cops than in capitalizing a letter. I understand that surfaces matter. I understand that gestures matter. But in this case, sure, let's capitalize the B. I will read the Times every morning and I will enjoy seeing that capital letter. But it's the more substantial things that I think will really help change how race works in America. And I know that sounds so curmudgeonly. I'm sorry. But yeah, I'm a language person. I like capital letters too. But frankly, it's the society that I'm more interested in changing as opposed to issues of orthography.
Tristan, this week, NAJA, the Native American Journalists Association, along with a number of other journalist associations, published a statement calling on news outlets to stop publishing the names and images of race-based sports mascots. We know there is one in particular that we here on The Takeaway do not call by name. Have any other outlets made changes based on that statement yet?
As far as we know, no. And I think this speaks to John's point as well in looking at what those bigger changes can be. NAJA has been joined by the National Association of Black Journalists, National Association of Hispanic Journalists, Asian American Journalists Association, and even the Society of Professional Journalists to call for that discontinuance. Where we sit on this is that it's a matter of ethics. Journalists have a say in using racist language. They shouldn't wait for those teams to change their names or logos in order to stop using that racist language. And there's no reason that reporters in 2020 are still referring to indigenous people by racist slurs from the 18th century.
Are you satisfied with the way that that particular team and others are being reported on so far?
No. Again, using those racist terms, racist terminology and logos are incredibly hurtful to people, and they are outright racist. Journalists do have a say in this, but obviously hiding behind the idea of objectivity a lot comes with continuing to reprint those images and words.
Sandra E. Garcia is a reporter for The New York Times. Tristan Ottone is editor-in-chief at the Texas Observer. And John McWhorter is a linguistics professor at Columbia University. Thanks so much to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.